thank you very much for having me. My name's Harrison Dye. I work down at Birmingham Podiatry at St. Vincent's Hospital. And so I've compiled a list of about 10 or 11 things that I most commonly see in my practice. I can tell you a few pointers about how to manage them before you come to me, or if you just need to see me and want some reassurance, that's more than fine. So every lecture I ever had as a medical student always started out with a little foot anatomy. So here we go. We've got 28 bones in your feet, 33 joints, over 100 ligaments and tendons that all work together. Very unique structure to the human foot. We don't see it in any other animal in the entire world. So it does take some practice to help you feel better. Just some more things. We got four layers of muscles on the bottom of the foot. Got a bunch of muscles on the top, and then we've got muscles coming all the way down from the knee, going all the way to help you walk. But they can get inflamed, they can get broken, they can hurt. So here's my top 10 reasons that I see people in my office. Number one is corns and calluses and warts. See those very commonly in the bottom of the foot. We have plantar fasciitis, which a lot of people will call heel spur syndrome. And we'll go over a little bit more of that in a little bit. Neuromas, or painful nerve swelling in your feet. Arthritis is another thing we see quite commonly too. Gout is very common too in the foot. We see that more commonly in the foot than any other joint in the body. Bunions and hammer toes, big deformities of your feet. We will address how those come about and what we can do to take care of them. Ingrown toenails are very common. That's about everyday practice for me. Neuropathy is a different topic that we'll spend some time on. And then fungal toenails is the biggest thing on my list that I see every day to help people manage those. So first off, corns and calluses. They are thickening of the skin on the bottom of your foot or sometimes on your toes. They come about due to extra pressure and irritation. So they can come about due to bony deformities, whether you have a bunion or a hammer toe, you can get a corn. You can have loss of cushion on the bottom of your foot that builds up extra pressure. And with that extra pressure, that extra skin builds up to try to protect itself, but it builds up out of control and it doesn't ever stop. So it keeps building and building, even though it's got the cushion there, but it's still sensing pressures. It builds up, it gets hard on you, it gets very painful, can interfere with your walking. Treatment of it. Very commonly, I see people for regular debridement of these. We trim off all that extra skin without cutting you, of course, at least not their underlying skin. But the biggest thing I see that we need to do is offload them. Because they're due to pressure and you standing on your feet all day, if we eliminate that pressure of you walking with some type of insole in your shoe or some type of soft cushion, we can usually make those things a lot less painful, sometimes even make them go away. There are skin creams that you can use to soften them. It's something you'll need to put on every day to help soften those up, because as soon as you can stop putting them on there, they're going to come back and start hurting on us again. There are some creams I can recommend if you're interested, I'll tell you. I like a lot of stuff that's over-the-counter because it tends to be a little bit cheaper that way. It's easier to find. You don't have to wait in line at the pharmacy for anything like that. And I talked about the soft insoles. But those are usually help most people's corns and calluses. There are some other things that can be done about them. There are surgeries to remove some of them. With some of the ones on the bottom of the foot, though, some of the surgeries, yes, we can get rid of a corn or a callus, but it might also cause another one on the adjacent toe or something like that. So we have to be a little bit cautious when we do that. I have some pictures. Please don't be grossed out of all the pictures. They're not the worst things I've seen, but this is just to show you that a corn is on the top of your foot. You usually see those on the top of the toe. Those are usually when you have a little hammer toe, it's actually rubbing on the top of your shoe and that thickened skin is building up there. Calluses are on the bottom of the foot. You see them very commonly on the pointer, on the bottom of the foot under the big toe, or more commonly under these little toes right through here. And most of those are due to loss of cushion in your foot. And unfortunately, I'm told to tell people those are birthday presents. They're not old age. Their birthday presents. I was told I can't call people old anymore. Warts are pretty common. It's a viral infection of the superficial layers of the skin. When you get one of these, I'll have a picture in a second, you don't have to worry about it going into your bloodstream and causing problems anywhere else. They're going to stick to their little island of skin that they've inhabited. But the big way to tell them the difference between the warts and the calluses is that warts are going to have your skin lines, just like your fingerprints are going to go around a wart, and a callus, they're going to go right through. And we kind of have to treat them a little bit differently, but that's the big thing I look for in determining whether you've got one or the other and how we're going to go about treating it. They also have black dots in them. Now, they don't go into those deeper layers of skin, but they do have a little bit of blood supply coming out to it, and those little black dots are what we look for, too, to know that they're inhabited and they're getting a little blood supply and they're living in your superficial layers of your skin. Treatment of them, I'm sure you've all seen the Dr. Scholl's over-the-counter wart remover. It does contain salicylic acid, which is the main thing we use to treat them. Over-the-counter strength of that is 17%. To really get salicylic acid to work on your foot to get rid of a wart, it's got to be upwards of 90 or 100%, and those are usually the forms that are available by coming to see me. Duct tape, it might sound like an old wives' tale, but it does work, and so I do highly encourage that. The adhesive in it does seem to help a lot of people with warts on their feet, on their fingers, on their elbows, wherever they might have gotten one. Cantharidin application is something I will do in my office. You can't get it anywhere else. It's actually beetle bug juice. And they've got a nice little form available that I just take a Q-tip and I dip it on the wart. It turns it white. It causes it to blister. That blister will shove all the layers of the skin, the superficial layers of the skin, off of your foot and usually get rid of that wart. And then, of course, if that doesn't work, when you go to surgical removal, it's actually taking out a wedge of skin or a circle of skin to get rid of it. I don't like doing that because it's going to create a hole in your foot, and usually a hole in the bottom of your foot is going to be worse than the actual wart, and that's going to take some time to heal. So if anything, we're going to try some of these other things before we get to surgically cutting out your wart. That's just a nice pattern. Sorry it's a little grainy, but that's what a picture of a wart looks like. We can see a few little black dots in there. Skin lines, if it was a little bit clearer, you'd see we'd be able to go around that. But that's kind of what we're looking for. And a lot of times when the wart stays around for a while, you'll get a little bit of a white appearance to it. That's just some extra moisture around there. Plantar fasciitis, this is that heel spur syndrome I was talking about. Typical course of plantar fasciitis is you get pain in the morning. It gets better with a few steps, but then as you go on throughout your day and you're walking, your daily habits, it's going to get a little bit worse by the end of the day. We have to take x-rays of it because we can get bone cysts and bone fractures on them, but we don't really see those in older population. Those are usually more in younger people. The bone cysts are kind of there from birth, and with some type of injury or activity, they can get a little inflamed. The stress fractures are something I usually just see in military personnel, people who go from sitting all day to go into the intense military physical training, going to walking 10 or 11 miles a day. We might get a stress fracture of your heel, and it just changes the treatment a little bit. But the main thing is it's fasciitis. It's not actually the heel spur. You do have a ligament that runs from your heel all the way to your toes. As we get a little bit older, our feet start to drop a little bit. That ligament, which is usually nice and tight, has to start getting a little bit longer. And so when you put your weight down for the first time of the day, you're actually forcing that ligament to get long all at once. And that causes little micro tears in that fascia. That's why that pain will be very intense for those first couple of days, but then it gets better, first couple of steps. Then it gets better, but then at the end of the day, with your feet being stretched out for long periods of time, it'll still get worse on us. So treatment for it, arch supports. I do not recommend that Dr. Scholl's machine that you might have seen for those inserts. I have not had one single patient ever be happy with those. So I'll tell you to stay away from those. But some of them are good, and I do have a list of recommended ones that I hand out to patients if needed. But stretching and icing are probably the best things you can do at home before you actually come see me. And stretching is simple as pulling your toes up and holding it for 30 seconds, down the other way for 30 seconds, doing 10 times of those before you actually get out of bed. That way we gently stretch out that fascia so it doesn't all of a sudden tear when you put your weight down in the morning. Icing is very good too. Simple trick is freezing a water bottle, rolling across the bottom of your foot. The icing decreases the size of blood vessels. It also has some anti-inflammatory action. And the coldness does help with the chronic inflammation around there. It'll make it feel better. Something you'll have to do throughout the day, too. Injections are something I do in my office. I try to do those first thing when you come to me. One is from personal experience because I've had this before. And the day I got it is the day I injected my own heel for it, and I've never had a trouble out of it again. Some people are not that lucky, but I have been. But most people will get better. Sometimes it takes more than one, but it is an option. We do have the custom orthotics we can get. I kind of compare the over-the-counter one, arch supports, with the custom orthotics as in reading glasses and prescription glasses. The over-the-counter ones are going to try to fit a wide variety of people without having to be measured for them or fitted. The custom orthotics are going to be like your prescription eyeglasses. They're made for you and you only. We don't have to go to those too often, mostly, and I don't like them too often because they are expensive. And I would rather save you a lot of money if you can use on something you might actually enjoy. There are night splints that you can wear at night. Don't have to do this too often. But a lot of the night splints are going to be uncomfortable for you. So if you like to sleep on your stomach, you're not going to like this. Most of them are made of hard plastic, very uncomfortable to sleep in. I couldn't sleep in it, so I don't recommend it. But there are some available that are nice and soft, and they can do the same job, and they work a little bit better. And one of my patients I already saw this morning is thanking me to no end for telling her about this one product I like. We always have a surgery, seems like, for everything. There's surgical release. There is some recovery to do with that. But that is going to be a last option of at least 6 months of care with me trying to do some of these other things, even possibly physical therapy to help out too, because they have some things that I can't offer. But most of the time we can get probably 99% of people better without having to go to surgery for it. But this is just a picture of what I was talking about. Plantar fascia on the bottom of the heel here runs all the way to your toes. This is typically where most people will get their pain, is in the bottom of their heel. It has a nice picture of some redness and a little bit of crack in there. It's just showing it's inflamed and injured and needs to be rehabilitated. I put neuromas and metatarsalgias in there together. I'm not the biggest bigot believer in neuromas per se. Neuromas is a nerve swelling, but it's usually due to metatarsalgia, in my opinion. But most people will get pain in the ball of their foot, which is right there behind your toes. Some people can have constant pain with it, or just with certain shoes, and most of those tend to be those nice little heels that a lot of the young ladies like to wear. But other shoes can cause it too. Anything that's a little bit tighter can actually squeeze the nerve or just squeeze those bones together and cause some pain in that area. Neuroma up here will typically have some burning, tingling pain in the toes. When we have metatarsalgia, it's more of like a dull ache or just a nuisance under the ball of your foot. And that's one thing I used to distinguish too. Metatarsalgia is usually due to loss of cushion, those birthday presents that I was talking about. Mostly, it just seems like you're walking on bone type feeling. And that can lead to a couple other things, but not usually. And I put on there abnormal bony deformity or fallen arches. Kind of have to go with the same thing. As your arches drop, your foot elongates and widens, and where those bones are supposed to rest get a little bit of dislocated into their little pockets they're supposed to sit in, and then you're not walking on the pockets of cushion anymore, you're actually walking on the bone. So we kind of have to treat you what you're feeling. Wider shoes, if that seems to be the culprit, you're getting some nerve pinching, causing some stinging pain in your toes. If we eliminate those, we can get you better. Or we can do soft insoles if it seems as though you're walking more on bone. I also use metatarsal pads quite often. This is something I have arts and crafts time in my office for. Cut little pads out, put them in certain places in your shoes to kind of help offload those metatarsal bones, offload that nerve. Anything I can do to kind of help you get better right from my office instead of telling you to take a pill and then give it 3 or 4 weeks and see if it makes it better. I like instant treatments. The injections can kind of go along with it. I don't do it for metatarsalgia. I do it for neuromas, though. But we have two different ones for neuromas. We can do steroid injections, which are going to help with the chronic inflammation around there and get you better. And some people will respond to that kind of right away. But there's also sclerosing injections. The sclerosing agent is actually dehydrated alcohol. It is going to be something that we inject you in the same area for in the same manner, but it's going to burn a little bit more as it goes in. But its job is to actually do a neuroma surgery without doing neuroma surgery. It's actually going to kill the nerve from the inside out. And it's going to leave you with the same thing as taking out a neuroma, which is having numbness on the bottom of your feet, but you're still going to have your nerve there. But it is something you're going to have to see me every other week for, from or somewhere between 3 and 7 visits. So it is a long process to do with that. But I just saw my young lady yesterday who's had 3. She's 98% better. She is so happy with that. Her problem is 7 years ago, she had neuroma surgery and ended up with a stump neuroma. So she's having to go through this process all over again. But she's much happier with what I did than what she had before, because she didn't really ever really recover from the neuroma surgery. So we try to avoid that if we can. And here's just more of what I was talking about. We have the metatarsal heads back here, and this is where you lose that cushion. You can feel like you're walking on bone. But sometimes people have a bony deformity of their foot where these two bones are right next to each other and can pinch the nerve as they go through, can cause some swelling of the nerve, get it red and angry like it looks in the picture. And so we'll just have to treat you and examine you, what we find, and hopefully get that better. Arthritis can happen in your feet too. I know a lot of people get them in their hips, their elbows, their shoulders, their knees. But I see it most commonly in the big toe. A lot of bending and squatting will cause that joint to wear out. But most of it is going to be dull, achy type pain, kind of pain at the end of the day from being on them all day long. But what's really going on is you're losing your articular cartilage in your foot. You can get bone spurs in the big toe, cause it not to move as well. I'll show you on the x-ray what that looks like. But some people, because of those bone spurs, it can actually pinch on the nerve in your big toe because they cross right across there. You can get some painful, burning, tingling sensation. Again, we've got some treatment to do. Inserts to limit motion. I did buy a pair of them. They're basically steel plates you put in your shoes. Warm for a day and a half. They were okay. They were comfortable on my feet. But the car ride with them made them so uncomfortable. So I was actually driving down an interstate trying to remove them. I just got my shoes off and drove that way. But bigger things you can do is change your shoes. And what we're looking for to help out with arthritis in the big toe is actually something a little bit more stiffer. Leathered sole shoes are going to be a whole lot better for you than soft little flip-flops or flats. Anything that you can't bend with your bare hands is going to work pretty good too, but anything you can fold right in half is going to aggravate it to no end. We can do injections into the big toe with a little bit of steroid solution. It's usually just buying some time, but it can be your cure-all, just like with the knee or the shoulder. That's usually just the steroid solution. We can't use alcohol into joints. And then again, surgery for everything. We can remove those burn spurs. We can kind of create a new joint. Unfortunately for the foot, the joint replacements for the big toe don't work as well as your knee or your hip. A knee or a hip will last you on average 18 years. And the big toe, it'll last you on average about 6 years. And those joint implants are notorious for causing even more bone spurs around there. And can be quite challenging to put in if they're not properly sized. So unfortunately, I don't have the best solution to give you a big joint, but there are some things we can do. Picture over here, this is just a little loss of some joint space here. It's not too bad of one, but a normal joint is supposed to look like this with a little black line in between the two bones. That's the articular cartilage. As you can see through here, it gets a little bit more white right here around that joint space. We kind of have a little grayish line through here. Over here behind me is one that is just really far gone. If y'all can see that. Pretty much no joint space, a lot of bone spurring around there. Couple of different things. Like I said, we can do just the bone spur, see if we can get some more motion. But that building the new joint thing I was talking about without using an implant is actually just making a little cut in the bone right through here. One, we're going to create space, and we clean out the rest of the bone spurs too. Can make your toe feel a whole lot better. Biggest problem with that surgery is some people end up with a little bit of a crooked toe, but if their joint's feeling better, that's usually a win in my book. Gout, some of you might have had. I hear this is the only thing that'll make grown men cry. But it's basically due to a uric acid buildup in your bloodstream, mostly due to trigger feuds. Those trigger feuds are anything that's going to contain purine amino acids, which I've got the list down here we'll get to. But through their little pathway, those purines get broken down, lead to an enzyme called uric acid. And unfortunately, humans lack uricase, which every other animal on the planet has. We don't have it. We can't get rid of it. It gets built up high in our bloodstream. It has to go somewhere. And for some odd reason, it likes the big toe. And so that's usually where we'll get it. But we'd have two different kinds of gout. We have people who produce too much uric acid, and then people who don't get enough, get rid of enough of it. So the real treatment on there is determining which one of those you are and treating your symptoms that way. The main way they do that is take a 24-hour urine test, which means you have to collect your urine for 24 hours. They have to analyze it and see which one, and then put you on the appropriate medication to prevent any further gout attacks. If you do happen to have a flare of it, there are things we can do. There are injections to help. Those are the steroid injections. They make it numb. They get rid of the inflammation around there, help you feel better. Oral medications, like we said, we gotta get that 24-hour urine test to find whether you're an overproducer or under excreter and treat you that way. But there are some ones that we can use for acute flare-ups to get you feeling better. But diet is gonna be the main thing that we're gonna have to work on. Beer is going to be more of a trigger food than wine or liquor, but it's just best to avoid all of them if you happen to have an attack. Shellfish, particularly shrimp, lobster, are going to set this off more than anything. For some unknown reason, I see a lot of people who eat asparagus and they'll get a gout attack right after. Can't really figure that one out, but it's on my list because I see it a lot. Beans, red meat, particularly cow, not so much wild game meat, but more seems locale. Whole grain and bacon are on there, and I found that odd because now we're in a bacon craze in this country, and so I'm just going to warn you about that one. But this is what happens. We get uric acid buildup, and it hits the big toe. All that uric acid builds up, gets that gouty material in there, which basically looks like white chalk. But it can make your big toe joint or some of the joints of the smaller toes be very painful. And I just like this picture over here because this was in my first lecture on gout, but it's a little demon biting the big toe. And so I just like sharing that one. Bunions. A lot of people have this. They can be painful or non-painful. But I call it hallux abducto valgus. That's the technical name for it. Mostly it's hallux is the big toe, abductor valgus is its position, but it's French for bump. They are mostly hereditary, so you can thank mom and dad for it. But you can get them from shoe gear. Like I said, these are those pointy-toed, high-heeled shoes that with continued wear and wear of them can cause you to get these little deformities. They can cause walking to be very difficult, and you can have difficulty finding shoes that will fit you. So obviously we just need to treat your symptoms with this. If it only seems to be certain shoes that causing the pain with the bunion, we get rid of them and find some better ones. Do not waste your money on any splints that are told you to get rid of your bunion. My mom bought one, she still has her bunion. So surgery is gonna be the only thing to really get rid of it. And I'll talk about a couple of surgeries in a second, but I put age limit ? I get a lot of patients come in and tell me, I wish I had my bunion fixed too many years ago, but I'm too old now. There's not really an age limit to bunion surgery. I've done bunions on 95-year-olds. I did a bunion on a 93-year-old several weeks ago. She's very happy. She's glad she finally had it done, and she's looking forward to getting her other one done. So we can help you. We'll just have to evaluate you first and see if you're a good candidate, because there's some other things that might cause you to have a bad outcome, and you've got to know the risks associated with it too. This is my nice pretty picture of a bunion. There's the bunion on the side of it. That toe is pitched out towards the rest of them, but you can see with this picture how it might make fitting shoes difficult, might make walking difficult as well. When we talk about bunion surgery, we're going to have to get an x-ray of you. We need to look at the internal bone structure to see what procedure might be good for you. And after we decide that, we need to talk about your expectations after surgery. With bunion surgery, there are actually about 150 different procedures you can do for a bunion. They boil down to four main types. It's just a bunch of 150 doctors came up with their own way to fix it, but they basically bound on four of them. We can do surgery all the way back here and in this joint to fix a bunion. If we do that, you can expect to spend 2 to 3 months completely off your foot with no weight on it whatsoever, which means hobbling around on crutches. But that is more of a lasting bunion surgery, and those are usually reserved for the teenagers so they don't ever come back on them. We can do bunion surgery here where we cut the bone and we move it over, put a screw or a pin in it. That's a pretty good one. That's probably the most common one I do. You do not have to be off your foot forever for that one. That is something you can walk from day one if you want to. It's a very stable cut we make in the bone. The bigger thing is that one is you're going to have to walk around one of those little goofy shoes for a while, because once we cut bone, it takes 6 or 8 weeks to heal. And so during that time, you kind of have to limit your activity a little bit, but I'm not going to give you too many restrictions. Like I said before, we can make a new joint out of a bunion. If you've got some arthritis and a little bit of a bunion, if we take out the piece of bone right through here, we can usually correct some of the bunion deformity, correct some of your arthritis, and get you feeling better too. The last bunion surgery that's also going to be one of these more lasting ones is actually taking off the cartilage of this bone and taking off the cartilage of that bone and putting those two together. Not too many people will have bunion surgery that way, but you do hear of it sometimes. But those are going to be the four main types. When we do the fusion of this joint through here, we have to be a little bit careful too. That's going to be one that we're going to walk around in a little boot for a while. But it usually doesn't have too much trouble healing up. Hammer toes, the next common little foot deformity I see. It's caused by a contraction of your tendons. We have long tendons that start up in your knee, go all the way to the tip of your toe. We also have short ones that go all the way from your foot to the tip of your toe. Long versus short tendons, the long one's going to win out all the time. They cause a contraction of your toe. They can be painful in shoe gear, mostly because that joint is sticking up, rubs on the top of your shoe. Or you can have corns and calluses on the tip of your toe, because as they're crooked, you're actually walking on the tip of your toe. The extra pressure causes that skin, those corns, to build up. And we can usually fix that too with a little bit of surgery or with some padding and some splints too. I do two different types of hammer toe surgery. I do a little tenotomy, which is something I just numb your toe in my office, and I use a needle they used to draw blood with, and I cut that little tendon that's causing the problem, straightens it out. You wear a bandage for a day, and you leave my office in your normal shoes. The open surgery is going to require a bigger incision. It's something I do in the surgery center, but we have to make a skin incision, take out a little piece of bone, maybe cut a tendon in two and stitch you back up. You're going to have stitches in your foot for about 2 weeks. You get the little goofy shoe again to wear for a while. But that one is a little bit more of a lasting surgery. When I do the little tenotomies, they will tend to come back usually about every 3 or 5 years, but as long as your toe is still good enough for tenotomy, we can do these multiple times and keep you out of trouble. But here's my little picture of a hammer toe. The tendons I'm talking about cutting, they come from the top of the foot and go over the tip of the toe. There's one on the bottom that comes under here and goes all the way around. Most of the time, the one I cut with the surgery is right through here on the bottom. And like I said, I just put a bandage on, there's no stitches, and you're back in your own shoes. When we do the open type of surgery, we have to take out this little bit of bone right here and put stitches in the cross to the top of your foot. But you'll have to come to me for an evaluation of your hammer toe so I can tell you which one's going to be good for you. Because some people, they've let their hammer toes go for too long and they need the open type of surgery and they can't have that little tenotomy. This is actually a claw toe, not a hammer toe. Claw toe is when they're crooked all the way under. We're usually looking at a deformity of this joint versus that joint to tell where you have a hammer toe or a claw toe. If your claw toe is flexible enough, we can fix that in the office without having to do any more of the open type surgery. But some people have really bad deformities in these claw toes, and we sometimes have to put a pin in your toe after we take out that little piece of bone there. But it's just something else. We'll have to see how your toe is and let you know what would be beneficial to you. Ingrown toenails, I've had a couple of these. I still get them. So I know they cause pain. But most of the time I see them, they're from improper trimming of your toenails. We do have pincer type nails. Those are the ones that look more like horseshoes. You might get them in your older age when, if you've worn tight-fitting shoes most of your life, that nail shape will actually change and become permanent to you. Makes you a little bit more prone to getting the ingrown toenails. And there is a possibility if those sit for too long that you get a little infection in your toenail. And you might have to go in some antibiotics to help get rid of it. But the real treatment is actually getting rid of that little ingrown portion of that toenail. You can do soaks with Epsom salt. That'll make it feel a little bit better. Peroxide works very well to help get some of that bad bacteria that's causing the infection out of there. Like I said, we might have to do antibiotics if it's really bad. I usually don't have to because most of the time they say if as long as you get rid of the ingrown portion of that nail, the infection will clear up. We can do surgical removal of your toenail. That does involve a little procedure in my office where we numb your toe, take out that little offending portion. But a lot of the times I can get that little piece of toenail out by actually putting some topical anesthesia on your toe, and then I freeze your toe too. And that usually allows me enough time to work and get rid of that without having to numb your toe. We can do permanent removal of your toenail if you just get chronic ones and they keep coming back and they keep coming back, which I have a picture of that on there. But the biggest thing you do is after we get rid of the ingrown toenail is to start cutting your toenail straight properly, which is straight across. And I usually tell people to avoid the bathroom surgery and trying to deal with it yourself because that's what gets a lot of people in trouble. They get a little bit of one, they dig at it, causes trauma. So if we actually get your toenail to grow out the way it's supposed to, we just keep cutting them straight across, we can avoid that problem in the future. There's my nasty picture of the ingrown toenail. With this one, this outside edge is ingrown. This one actually has what we call a pyogenic granuloma on the side of it. That's something we see with a lot of chronic ingrown toenails. With that little nail edge digging into the skin, causes a lot of irritation, and we call this proud flesh, but it's a very vascular piece of tissue that if you bump it, bang it, whatever, it's gonna bleed quite a bit on you. And the only way to really get rid of that is to have that little piece of toenail removed and to take out that little piece. But over here, we have one that's been permanently fixed. And so what that really involved was numbing up your toe, taking out a little sliver of toenail, and then we put a chemical back there. The chemical denatures all the proteins that causes the nail to grow. It is going to create a little bit of wound that needs taken care of, but it'll usually heal up in a couple of weeks, and then you won't have to worry about ever having an ingrown toenail ever again. There are slight instances where they will come back even after an ingrown toenail procedure where we try to kill the nail root, but most of the time it will not. The chemical I use in my office, I switch out every couple of months, so I always have a fresh batch going. Most of the time when they come back, it's that you're using a giant bottle and trying to keep it around for years and years and years, and it just gets bad. Neuropathy is, if we break down the word, it's painful nerves or something's wrong with nerves. But the most common causes of it I see is diabetes is definitely number one. Low back pain can cause neuropathy too. If you have a slip disc in your back, a herniated disc, a spinal stenosis, arthritis in your lower back, you can get neuropathy in your feet too. I see quite a bit of nutritional neuropathy in my office. As we get older, our stomach lining wears out. It doesn't absorb all of our nutrients we need anymore. Diabetes can play a role in that too, in that it's an immunocompromised state, and your gut's wearing out and you're not absorbing the nutrients. So I put a lot of people on B vitamins for this. And this is something that you can do at home to help out with this if you're having some burning, tingling pain in your feet. The B vitamins you're looking for are B6, B9, and B12. Nature's Made has their brand. You can get 140 of them for about $8. It's one pill a day. And it shouldn't interact with any of your other medications for the most part. There are a couple to worry about. But you don't have to worry about getting toxic on B vitamins. They're water-soluble vitamins. You absorb what you need, and what you don't need, you excrete out. And so it's not going to do any harm to try it out for 30 days and see how you respond to it. And if it's working at 30 days, we just stay on it. The alcoholic neuropathy kind of goes along with the nutritional because most of the alcoholics don't eat very well. But signs or symptoms where you're looking for neuropathy are burning, tingling type pain, night pain mostly. Bed sheets are so irritating that you have to sleep with no covers on your feet. You can have circulation issues too that can cause some neuropathy. That's going to have to be addressed by somebody other than me, because I'm just a carpenter of the foot. Circulatory issues are going to be a plumber. Neuropathy is really an electrician's issue, but I treat a little bit of my office. So we really have to address what's going wrong with it. There are some oral medications you can take other than the B vitamins. I do not prescribe those. I leave those up to your primary care because those are the ones that are going to interact with some of the other medications you're on, and it's better left up to them. Those do require dose adjusting. We have to start off low, get to a point where you're getting the benefit of the medication without the bad side effects of them. But we do have some topical medications that can help with neuropathy too. The one I like, which is available over the counter, is capsaicin cream. A lot of people might have tried it when they had shingles outbreaks. It's red pepper cream. It desensitizes your feet and desensitizes the nerves so they don't fire pain signals up to your brain. Something you have to put on 2 or 3 times a day. Just word of caution, make sure you wash your hands really good off of it because you don't want to get any in your eyes, on your lips, or anything else because it will burn a little bit and it may make it worse before it gets better. And then in severe cases of neuropathy, we might need to refer you to a pain management or other specialists, depending on what the main cause of it is. Ulcerations, these are the ones that usually, it's a loss of skin due to constant pressure and irritation, but the main issue it comes about is going to be neuropathy, and that's why it's there right after. These ulcerations, opening the skin, can get extra dirt in there, get bad bacteria in there, can lead to it getting infected, and you can lose a toe, part of a foot, or your whole leg because of it. So this is definitely something, if you think you have one of these or think you might be prone to it, I want to see you right away and want to keep you in my office coming in so we can handle what issue might be leading towards this. When you get an ulceration, you come in, you see me, we look at it. If you've got some extra skin, that thickened callus tissue around there, we're going to trim it off. But the biggest thing we're going to do is offload it. Since these mostly come about to those constant pressure and irritation like those corns and calluses, we need to treat them just as such. So we offload them with some pads or maybe some inserts in your shoes, get pressure off them, get them healed up, and then make sure you come and see me on a regular basis so we can address that issue and make sure you don't break down again and don't ever have any trouble. Sometimes we have to do surgery to fix the deformity of your foot that's causing that pressure. If you get an ulceration because your big toe is not moving well, once we get that ulceration healed up, we might want to heavily consider doing some surgery so you get some more motion in that big toe so you never have that problem again. You know, if you've got a contracture of your toe and it's banging on the end of the shoe, causing the callus and it breaks down, you may want to consider having the hammer toe fixed because of that, just so you never get one of these and never have to worry about it becoming infected again or losing a toe because of it. Got some nice pictures. These aren't the gruesome ones I have. I do have quite a few pictures of some gruesome ulcers, but I'm not going to let y'all see those. And then on to fungal toenails, which is the number one thing I see every day, and athlete's foot goes along with it. Fungus lives everywhere. It's on the walls in here, it's on the stage, it's floating in the air somehow, but due to certain people can get it into their nail root of their big toe, can cause your toenail to grow thickened, it can cause them to grow crooked. It really causes them to look like blue cheese, if you want to get my honest opinion of it. I hope nobody had blue cheese on their sandwich, but it can be quite painful if they grow abnormally thickened. It can make them become ingrown, and it looks unsightly. It was found about 3 years ago, there's a genetic link to toenail fungus, so something else you can blame your parents for. And if you had athlete's foot of a child, you have a very high probability of getting fungal toenails later on in life. Treatment of fungal toenails. We do have topical versus systemic antifungals. I don't like the systemic antifungals. It's quite a simple regimen of taking a pill a day for 90 days, but it can have some bad side effects on your liver, something we have to draw blood work for before we put you on it, just to make sure your liver's functioning well. And we have to check it during and after so we make sure we don't completely kill your liver and cause you problems later on. topical treatment is a whole lot safer. You might have seen commercials for Jublia, a little football player in a helmet trying to tackle out toenail fungus. It's got the fungus for bangs. Quite a nice sales pitch, but it does work. Put my mom on this one. Her toenail fungus is almost gone. And that's the one I will be most likely to prescribe to you if you want to really get rid of your toenail fungus. But really, in my office, I have a lot of people who don't really care. It's a little unsightly. It's just thick and it's painful. I recommend Vicks Vapor Rub for those. Something you put on your toenail once a day at night. It'll help soften it up. It'll make it a little less thick. It also turns it a little bit gray, so don't be surprised. But a lot of people like that and are very glad they started using that on there. But it's going to be something you're going to have to continue doing and doing and never stop. But that's the cheapest thing for toenail fungus. I do see quite a few people who come into my office just for the regular debridement because they can't manage it on their own. I have the big, really big nail clippers that I use for these, but I'm happy to see you for that. For most insurances, they're only going to pay so often for it. I generally see people for 3 months. There's some wiggle room in that one. If they're not getting that long, we can do 4 months. If they're a little bit closer, we can do a little bit less of time, but the magic number we're really looking for is 65 days, and that's as soon as I can see you in my office for the fungal toenails. They also have laser treatment in our office available for the fungal toenails. Not the huger believer in this, but some people want to try it. No insurance is going to cover that one. That one's going to be entirely out of pocket for you. But I have seen it work, but I'm just not the biggest believer of using infrared therapy on toenails to kill something, unless it's more often what they're doing. When you have the laser treatments, it's usually every 3 months, along with the debridement. I think if you probably use the laser a little bit more often than that, you get some better results. But none of the people who offer the laser are really offering that treatment on a regular basis. These are my scaled down pictures of some nice and fungal toenails. I have seen a lot worse than this recently. But you can see how big and thick they get, how they look like yellow, how they can, if you use your imagination, look a little bit like rotting blue cheese. But they are painful, but these are the types that we'd want to use some Vicks Vapor Rub on first, and then if you really want to get rid of the toenail fungus, we use some of those other medications. And here's my nice picture of some athlete's foot. Usually dry, scaly skin, a lot of itchy feeling with this. If this is left gone for too long, we can actually have some skin breakdown in between there. You can try a few things over the counter for this. I like the Desnex powder and I like the Tenactin powder. Anything, you can try that first, and then anything else to help get rid of this, you'd have to see me for, because it's only available by prescription. But there are some really good ones out there. One of the newer ones out there, guy had been struggling with the athlete's foot for quite a long time. I gave him this new stuff. It's supposed to be used for 2 weeks. He quit using it after 3 days because it was already gone. And so it is some high priority, but you'd have to see me if it gets that bad. And I put this in here because I'm closing up, but what to expect if you were to come to a podiatrist's office? Well, obviously, we want to see your feet, so don't be bashful about it. I can probably tell you more horror stories of some worse feet than yours. I don't particularly care if they're not perfectly clean, but it is preferred. But they're probably, if you've got some of these batter looking toenails or some of these corns or calluses, they're going to look better when you leave there. Like I said, you might need some x-rays of your feet. If you've got some of these hammer toes or bunions or the plantar fasciitis, we might take x-rays of you. I do have two wonderful little medical assistants that work for me. Everybody loves them. They tend to come in to see my medical assistants more than they come in to see me. But I have to see you when you come into my office. So, but you can expect some good people working for me. I don't frequently do ultrasound treatment, but you might get it when you come in. If you're going to have ultrasound, it's probably going to be from a physical therapist or something else. I don't typically do it. But in some cases I do, because it's worked for them in the past and we still have a machine there. And then the last thing is the Dremel tools. You might be familiar with these. On the bottom of the foot, they can be quite ticklish. We use them frequently. When I do the nails, we use the clippers, but then afterwards, use the Dremel tool to smooth them down, to kind of put a little final touch on them. Same things with the corns and calluses. But I have some people who don't even want me to use that because their feet tickle so bad. I have another lady who just can't wait for me to get to the Dremel tool because she loves getting her feet tickled. So just to warn you. I do put some things in here. Recommended shoes that I particularly like. Merrell is a good walking shoe. So is New Balance. They're usually a little bit wider than most of the shoe to accommodate some of those deformities. If anybody's a runner, Asics is at the top of their game right now with running shoes. I pretty much wear these exclusively. I wear these in my office too. I don't dress up as well as I did today, usually, but I like the Asics. Born is a very nice shoe, except you're going to have to pay for them. They are an entirely handmade shoe, but they're very wide. They can accommodate a lot of the deformities, but they're going to run you upwards of about $200. SAS stands for San Antonio Shoes. There's a store here in, over by the Galleria. They do make some nice and wonderful shoes to try out too. The thing I really like about the SAS shoes is they have already in them a very nice and soft and cushiony insole into them. And so I do recommend those quite a bit. The biggest piece of advice I have for you is get measured for your foot. Your foot does get bigger as you age. Like I said before, your feet will flatten out, it will get wider, but most people tend to think that they're gonna be the same size since high school. Not actually the case, because I'm only 12 years out of high school. My foot has gone up a whole size since then. So I'll just warn you to make sure you get measured if you're having a little trouble. A little funny story is my sister was having some foot pain. I got her into the correct size shoe and all of her foot pain has gone away. It killed her to go from a 7 to a 7.5, but I reminded her she's not bowling every day and nobody's gonna see the size of her shoe on the back. I do have some funny shoes because I subscribe to an email list that sends me a funny shoe of the day. So I put some of these on here. The five fingers you might have seen people wearing, I don't agree with those. There's actually a lawsuit pending against them for causing some fractures of the feet. I can't figure out how this one works, but luckily they have some arrows there. I'm not sure how you walk in these, but I don't think she's walking at all. I don't want you to slip on a banana peel down here, and I don't want you to get a cut in skin on this one. And thank you very much.